Welcome to the Composer Chris Cast. This is episode 9, and this episode is going to be a little different than the previous episodes. Today I'll be joined by an old friend of mine, someone that I literally watched grow up. We were attending the same church for many years. In fact, his dad was my church pastor for 20 years. And when they came to our church, our guest, Ryan, was 3 or 4 years old, very, very young. So I literally watched him grow up, and he's become a good friend over the years. And while we've checked in with each other over texts and social media since we both left our home church, I noticed that we were going through some of the same periods of questioning things or rethinking some things. And this has actually been a trend among people that have grown up in the evangelical church or evangelical culture. And for better or for worse, it's been given the name deconstruction. So Ryan and I are going to have a discussion on what deconstruction is, if it's a good thing, if it's a bad thing, things that put us on this journey, and how it has affected our faith. So if you grew up in a Christian or specifically evangelical context, some of what we talk about may resonate with you. But if you did not grow up in this context, this will give you a small glimpse into what many young Christians and evangelicals have been thinking about recently. Here is my discussion with Ryan Lennon. Ryan Lennon, it is great to see you and talk to you. It's before we recorded, we figured it had been about a decade that we've actually like talked to each other. It's been texts for a long time, but it's good to see you, man.
Yeah, good to see you. Good to be here. I'm honored that you would have me on your podcast.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I was, I've been thinking a lot about this topic for years now. And just in our little text conversations every now and then, just seeing you on social media, it's like, yeah, I resonate with a lot of what you're saying. And because I've known you since you were like, what, 3, 4, something like that.
Yeah.
Just to have watched you over 30 years, it's been cool. And it's also been informative and helpful. For those listening, just a little note that Ryan's dad was my pastor for 20 years, I believe, in the Chicago suburbs. He came when I was in high school. He married my wife and I, did our counseling and everything. And to this day, still the best preacher I've sat under in the church. I spent 7 years in the SBC, and you know, they pride themselves on, you know, what great preachers they are. And again and again, I'd be like, what? This is more pomp and circumstance than content. But anyway, so yeah. I think I was kind of, when it comes to like evangelical preaching, I was spoiled by your dad for a long time. So,
well, that's nice of you to say.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a little note for our listeners and how, you know, we became friends so long ago. And man, we played football together on Sundays, and played in the church's band for a long time too. Lots of memories with Ryan. So it's great to see you and talk to you.
Yeah, ditto. Great to be here.
So this idea of deconstruction in the faith, it's become a hot topic over the last 5, 6 years. I think that's when I started seeing it. And you've gone through some seminaries since then, right? And done a lot of processing of all this stuff. So it's for someone who's maybe seen the word deconstruction in regards to faith, but isn't really sure what that means. What does it mean?
Yeah. So I'll speak. I'm obviously not an expert. I have not studied deconstruction as a discipline or anything like that. But as someone who I would say I'm going through the process of deconstruction even now, personally. And by the way, deconstruction can refer to really any position or belief or idea, right? But I'll be using it, and I think you'll be using it in this conversation in the context of, one, white American evangelicalism.
Yes, correct.
And then two, more broadly in some cases, white American Christianity, right? Mm. I think that's important to highlight. But cool. The way I understand deconstruction is it's really a process of, sometimes a long process, of ultimately concluding that some of the major tenets and beliefs and values of white American evangelicalism are not only untenable, but they're actually harmful, and they're abusive, and they're toxic. So I think the deconstruction is the process of coming to that realization.
And when you define it like that, there's part of me that thinks, oh my gosh, I've been doing that too. But also, to an extent, don't we all do, at least people in faith communities, aren't we always doing that to some extent?
Or... Yeah, no, that's a great point. So I think it's important to stress that there's, as far as I see it, there's two directions that deconstruction can take. Hmm. Option one, and this is the ideal, and this is kind of what you're getting at, is deconstruction that leads to reconstruction, right? Hmm. You have disassembled your the beliefs that you've taken for granted your whole life, and now you're rebuilding with a new foundation, right? And maybe you're able to take things, bits and pieces from what you left behind in the former tradition, and you're also drawing heavily, ideally, from other traditions as you rebuild. And from that perspective, you're exactly right. That is something that we should all strive for as believers. I think ultimately that is nothing more than faith seeking understanding, right? Seeking understanding and pruning away the harmful and false aspects of our faith and only holding on to what we know to be true and good and loving. The other direction that deconstruction can take, of course, and this is why it's treated as such a, with such disdain and fear in so many circles, is it can and does, unfortunately, lead to deconversion, right? Mm-hmm. Leaving the faith entirely in the process of all of these questions that you're unable to answer given your faith background. So in some cases, they become agnostic or atheist, or they leave and adopt an entirely different religion. And I think, Chris, you and I both know numerous people who have gone through that process, right?
Yep.
Another thing I would add alongside that, kind of secondary to your question, is I think it's pretty common for white evangelical pastors, and especially megachurch pastors, to treat deconstruction as this, and I'll quote Matt Chandler here, paraphrase, sexy fad that people do to try to get attention or sympathy or try to look cool, right? And that, so coincidentally, that's coming from someone who, pay attention, has a vested interest in people not deconstructing or asking scrutinizing questions about what he's teaching and how he's living out his life, right? He loses money if people ask the wrong questions, just as an aside. But as someone who is going through the process, and I think anyone who is going through the process would agree, it's a scary and painful process. And it's more something that happens to you rather than something that you seek out or choose. Right. And it's scary for multiple reasons, right? On the one hand, your faith is being dismantled before your eyes. And for all you know, you don't know where the bottom is going to end, right? Where is it going to end? Is it going to end in deconversion? You really don't know as you're going through it. At the same time, it's scary and painful because there's a really good chance that there's going to be a lot of severed and, you know, a lot of tension and severed relationships with close friends and family, right? Because you've left Plato's cave, but they haven't, right? Mm-hmm. And we all know what happens when the people who've left the cave come back and tell the people inside the cave what it's like to be outside of the cave. It doesn't end well, right? So that's the long-winded answer to your question.
No, that's a good answer. That's I especially appreciate highlighting the two different directions that it could go. But it starts with a critical reevaluation. And like you said, the people that I've talked to, or even just like on a shallow social media level, it's not an enjoyable process. Like it hurts. And we can kind of compare notes maybe on ours, because I think, man, yeah, I have done some deconstruction myself. But it has not been fun. And it's made me ask things that I never thought I might ask, or question things that, like you said, took for granted. I just kind of assumed, okay, well, this is blah, 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 and the Bible says this, so blah, you know. So are you comfortable sharing like some general ideas on what caused you to maybe realize you're deconstructing? Absolutely. Yeah, but I mean, we don't need to talk specific, but just like some big picture things, and then I'm happy to do the same, and then you can diagnose me as if I am, if I've done something not myself.
I'll tell you if you deconverted or not.
Oh yes, okay.
So I would say on the one hand, it was probably inevitable that I was going to deconstruct. Just that's like more of a personality thing. I said, on the one hand, it's a painful, terrifying process, but at the same time, I'm constantly trying to look at things from different perspectives. I'm constantly more or less deconstructing my beliefs about everything and trying to start from scratch and whatever. That's just it could be a personality flaw, who knows? But I think it really started for me, similar time as you, but started for me in 2015. I was working in youth ministry at a church. Had started in seminary, Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary in Charlotte. And this is the first time that I had been, I was learning how to read the scriptures in the original languages, how to exegete passages in light of their historical and cultural contexts. I was being exposed to the fact that Christianity is so much more diverse and rich and nuanced than white American evangelicalism. I was reading different thoughts and different theologies and philosophies. And just that process alone, if you do it the right way, seminary should cause some sort of dismantling or deconstruction or faith, and you should rebuild. At the same time, though, so that was a huge influence. And then 2015 was when Donald Trump was running for president. And I saw so many evangelicals hitch their wagon to this, you know, pathological, lying, criminal, misogynist, racist, etc. And at first they did it with gritted teeth, right? It was the lesser of two evils as they understood it. But then they started to defend him. Right. And they blatantly ignored his egregiously horrible behavior. Right. They'd call it a locker room talk, or they'd say he's a baby Christian, and it just became nauseating. And it just was exacerbated from there. If you remember, right, 2015, then he gets elected in 2016. Then we see mass shooting after mass shooting. And I'm sure you even saw some of my Facebook arguments, and I'm talking about, you know, just basic gun control. And you see these evangelicals, they clearly worship their Second Amendment rights. They worship it, right? And I just could not understand the vitriol I was getting just about a basic statement about how we should maybe not have assault rifle, whatever. Not to get into a political thing, but
that's fine. Go ahead.
Then COVID hits, right? And you have all of these anti-vaxxers, anti-maskers. Then, you know, January 6th and the election deniers and QAnon conspiracists. And I'm looking at this, and for a while I was like, man, evangelicals really sold their soul for a buffoon, right? But then I read Jesus and John Wayne, The Color of Compromise, The Making of Biblical Womanhood. And all of these in their own way basically point to the same reality, that White American evangelicalism was founded to support, promote, or enable abuse, misogyny, homophobia, racism, slavery, etc. Right? At their core, that's what they were founded for. And they were a Christian excuse to adopt those behaviors. And so what we're seeing with evangelicals today is the natural result, right? It's cartoonishly insane at this point, but this is the result of it. This is the fruit of a rotten tree. And one thing I would add before you go into your background is I want to make clear, I am not saying that all evangelicals are in agreement with all these things.
Right, right.
I am related to several evangelicals, and I'm close friends with several evangelicals who I have a ton of respect for. I love them to death. They're great people, and they don't agree with a lot of these things or any, right? However, and this is what really did it for me. This is what pushed me over the edge and said I can never return to evangelicalism. White American evangelicalism, got to say that.
Yes, yes.
It's asking the question, not all evangelicals are white supremacists, misogynists, homophobic, QAnon conspiracy theorists, election deniers, anti-vax, anti-mask. Not all of them are. But why is it that white supremacists, election deniers, QAnon conspiracy theorists, misogynists, et cetera, why is it that when they join a faith community, so many of them happen to feel right at home in white American
ouch,
right? And the best we can say, the most charitable thing we can say to that is, well, white American evangelicalism as an institution hasn't done enough to fight against those things, and they need to do a better job, right? But that's a bunch of BS, right? I think the reality is, again, this is revealing what evangelicalism is at its core. And it's rotten to the core. That's my answer.
Wow. Thanks for listening, everyone. No, I'm yeah. Wow. A lot of what you said in there, if people could see the video, I'm like nodding my head just because so much of that resonates for me. Yeah. Leading up to 2016, when I heard Trump was running, I was like, okay, that's not going to, you know, he'll be gone early on. But yeah, he just kept sticking around. And then, you know, at the time, I'm in Fort Worth, Texas. I'm in the South pretty much. And hearing like, well, you know, he's saying things that are true. Like, whoa, wait a minute. Whoa. And a lot of his rhetoric showed me a lot of the ugliness that is buried in our white evangelical tradition that I don't know if I just didn't realize it was there or So, and then when he wins because of white evangelical support, I was a teenager in the 90s when character mattered to be president of the United States, and Bill Clinton cannot be president because of his moral failings. and it's like, hold on a second. Now the same people who told me that are saying, if you're a Christian, you are going to support this guy. And that just completely like whoop, fried my circuits, you know? So, so going through all that in Texas for those 4 years, and then, I wasn't even thinking about this, but January 6th, I was furious.
Yep.
When we were seeing what we were seeing, and not just that, but so many people that I've known and respected were trying to pass it off as, well, it's no big deal. The media is just hyping it up. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you people have eyes. Are you not seeing what's happening? And seeing how many people were waving Christian flags that were there and singing Christian quote unquote worship songs that were there. And some Chris Tomlin too. But while they're, you know, singing that and then saying hang Mike Pence at the same time.
Yeah.
And that for me, I feel my blood boiling as I'm just talking about it now. But I for
Yeah.
me, that was like the end point. Like, I can't do this anymore. I cannot identify, or I not th I don't identify with what I'm
Yep.
seeing here. You know what I mean? The guys who go into the, was it the House chamber or Senate chamber, and like pray, thanking God for what they did. Like, it's just
Gives
mind-boggling
you
and
chills.
disconnected. Huh? What'd you say?
It gives you chills.
It
The
does.
level of idolatry that that takes. It's chill.
So at this point, we're living in Kansas, and we were, trying to find a new church. But because of COVID, a lot of churches just aren't meeting, or only meeting online, or not giving you a full, picture of what their church is, all about and what it's like. But the ones that we did visit that were open, no one's wearing masks or anything. And I'm not a, I'm not trying to make a get masked, get vaxxed argument here, but it was evident that there was not a concern for people's health. It was more about my rights and the government overreach than it was about looking out for your, fellow man. And again, something I was raised to believe, love your neighbor as yourself. Your neighbor's life is more important than yours, right? I mean, that's kind of like what we were talking about. I wasn't seeing that. I was only seeing the government's trying to infiltrate or trying to infringe on, on our constitutional God-given rights. And I can't resonate with this. Anyway, long story short, we visited an Episcopal church and felt right at home. Which, if you would have told me that even 5 years ago, I would have said no way. So yeah, we are members of the Episcopal Church now. Very conservative members of the Episcopal Church, I think. Yeah, my beliefs are still very much to the right of what most Episcopals are going to believe, and I still have that evangelical core that's telling me, well, what really does scripture say and why does it say it? Like, I still go back to that. So I think I'll still have that, Northern Evangelical Wheaton College core to my being, in there somewhere. But yeah, it's different. And Sarah and I got to the point where my wife Sarah, for our listeners out there, we got to the point where we didn't want to fight the Christian nationalism battle, or fight up against that. So
I have a personal rule. If they are waving an American flag in the auditorium, I'm
you're
never going
done.
No thanks.
And also one other thing, as a musician, as an artist, there's no value or love of art in the white evangelical church. I mean, that's a broad brush. I know not everyone is like that, but
But that actually brings up an interesting point, because what I don't want to see from the aftermath of whatever happens in the next decade, right? If the world doesn't blow up before then, right?
yeah,
Which
jeez.
is this is not just a political thing. Like, white American evangelicalism's rottenness has been surfaced by Trump, but their issues are so much deeper than a mere political issue, right? And so when you look at Hillsong Church and all the corruption there, Bill Gothard and IBLP, which we can talk about shiny happy people,
Yes, we do need to.
I mean, just the corruption. I mean, seriously, do you want me to, like, the evangelical, many of the evangelical heroes, right, over the last decade, James McDonald, what's happening to him? He's about to be I won't say more. John Piper, John MacArthur, Matt Chandler. I could list that. Mark Driscoll, right? These are your heroes. And what they've turned out to be is charlatans, right? Frauds who all they care about is consolidating their own power and forcing it on other people. But I think, to your point, and this is something I remember you saying when we were, even when I was young, right? You brought up, you lamented how really pathetic the Christian arts tend to be. And I think a lot of that actually is the evangelical obsession with just converting people. Everything has to be a conversion effort, right? And so that's what they do. They sprinkle a Bible verse in, they tell people that they need to accept Jesus into their heart, and that's evangelism to them. I think white American evangelicalism being obsessed with conversion, I think it reveals that they're more of a cult than anything else. And what gives more evidence to that, I'm not just trying to be provocative, is they aren't open to questions. They're afraid of sincere questions. And here's what I would say, kind of going back full circle, my own experience and, you know, the two paths of deconstruction, it can lead to deconversion on the one hand or reconstruction. If anyone cares about my advice, if you're going through that, it would be, and I told my wife this just the other day, and she kind of rolled her eyes and was not happy with me, but I said,
I've been there.
I said, were it not for seminary, I would have deconverted. And the reason for that is seminary gave me the tools and the resources that I could quickly rebuild. And I was like, oh, Christianity doesn't have to look this way. And in fact, that's a false version of Christianity in so many ways. Christianity doesn't have to look that way. But I wouldn't have known that had I not gone to seminary and actually been exposed to different viewpoints. And so what I would say is, if you're going through deconstruction, and it is scary because you don't know when the bottom's going to come, try to grasp at whatever truth you can hold on to and seek out different perspectives in the Christian tradition that are so outside of your comfort zone, maybe, and just see what you can hold on to. Because at the end of the day, and this is why I'm still a Christian, the truth can withstand any question. And in fact, it welcomes it. And I think we can learn a lot from other religions, even like Judaism, where in many traditions within Judaism, questions are encouraged, right? Debating about what a passage, you know, how did the rabbinic tradition even happen, right? It happened, or what was it, other than a strong emphasis on this is a living, breathing set of texts that we are human and imperfect, and so our understanding of God is never going to be perfect, and it's never set in stone, and we're always going to learn new things. So
what kind of church are you attending now?
Well, funny enough, we have been attending an Episcopalian church in our area.
Really? Yeah. The Lord my be only, with you.
My only complaint, we enjoy it a lot, love the liturgy, all that. My only complaint is, and maybe this is just a Southern thing, but all the churches just seem to be so segregated still. I mean, it's just sad that you look in a church and you're surprised when you see a minority family in there. Like, oh, cool, it's a minority family. It's like, why? Why are we still like that? What is this, 1950? Like, I would love to see a lot more diversity. But that's probably my major complaint with it.
Yeah, and I'm in the town that we live in. It's a 18,000 people. It's a rural town. We're about a half hour from Wichita, but there's not much between us and Wichita, so it's a mostly white community. So yeah, our church is the same way, and that's mostly just, I think, demographics of the area that we're in. So Sarah, my half Mexican wife, brings the, you know, the diversity, and my quarter Mexican children. So but yeah, but I understand that. I'm sure there are several Episcopal churches in Wichita, and I'd be curious to know what those look like. So yeah, that's an interesting point.
Visit chrystykler.com/goodsam to download your free copy of The Good Samaritan, my cantata for vocal soloists, choir, and chamber orchestra, based on the parable of the Good Samaritan. You'll find the option to download the piece as either a single track or as a multi-track album. You'll also see a link to listen to the piece on YouTube. Again, visit christeichler.com/goodsam to get your free recording of the Good Samaritan. Let's get back to the conversation.
Okay, well, now let's get into when we were texting about this, we this could be the last thing we touch on here is we both saw Shiny Happy People on Prime, Amazon Prime. Oh my goodness, there was a lot there to process. Now, I was too old really to like be into that show, the Duggars show.
Yep.
But I, from what I've been told or what I've read from others, that was like must view TV if you were a Christian evangelical family in the 2000s. And is that accurate from your?
I never personally watched it. I'm not sure if my sisters did. We weren't as into reality TV scene unless it was Survivor and then The Mole were the two that we watched.
I started watching Alone based on mutual friend of ours who was told by your dad to check it out, which is kind of
cool. Alone is great.
Yeah.
We watch reality TV now. I'm just saying.
Okay. Yeah. So I was homeschooled for 2 years, third and fourth grade.
Yep.
I went back to public school because of band. There were no homeschool options then. But yeah, my parents decided to homeschool me, I think because of the scary rhetoric that some outlets were, Christian outlets were putting out about public schools.
Yep.
And then my brother and sister were homeschooled K-12. So I, even though I wasn't directly in homeschool, and our church, obviously, growing up, had a lot of homeschool families. So even though I wasn't in it, per se, there was enough around it. I was enough around it so that I could speak the language, I guess, and understand what was going on. So I watched Shiny Happy People, and wow, there were, well, I'll just turn it over to you. You saw that, right? And so what was your, what were you thinking while you were watching this?
I was processing a lot of trauma from my past, to be honest with you. Yikes. But no, you know, I think the takeaway from Shiny Happy People, for anyone who has not seen it, is Bill Gothard, if you're familiar with him, or the Institutes of Basic Life Principles, whether or not you recognize it, he was and is influential for white American evangelicalism, even to this day. And again, maybe not directly, but certainly indirectly, even the way that hierarchy is described, right? Mm-hmm. The umbrella where
the authority,
God, the top, and then Christ, right? That's subordinationism. It's heretical, but let's continue. And then the husband, and then the wife, and then the children, and nothing bad can happen to you if you're under that umbrella. Now, again, I got to qualify. My dad's a great guy. He was influenced by Bill Gothard. We did go to, I only remember going to two Bill Gothard conferences.
Mm, okay. Because they were right in our backyard, right? In Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the one conference we went to was in Naperville. But anyways, and I must have, I don't remember exactly how old I was the first one. I was probably 8, let's say. And I remember even then being really creeped out and feeling like it was a cult, even though I couldn't articulate that at that age. Mm. But the reason was, it was funny. I was in a children's class. And for whatever reason, what I remember from that class was the teacher, who was a male, went out of his way to stress that it's sinful for boys to have long hair. And I remember looking around and being like, we all have buzz cuts. So why is this a thing? It was really bizarre. Anyways, so we went to two growing up. We hated it. My dad was more of a fan. My mom could not stand Bill Gothard. My mom came from a very, very legalistic Baptist background. Mm. I'm not sure if it was Southern Baptist or independent. Mm-hmm. Either way. So she thought he was way too legalistic. And, you know, that's why we only went to two conferences. But my take on Shiny Happy People, I hope my parents eventually watch it, is the takeaway isn't to say, wow, what a crazy cult. And man, good thing that we avoided that. It's to say, how did this infiltrate our own belief system and what we're teaching, and why? Right. Those are my initial thoughts on that.
Yeah. The daughter, I don't remember her name, but the one daughter who was in the whole show being interviewed, she did not look like she was enjoying being there. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Clearly it was a painful thing. And hearing how they were kind of told to respond in certain ways when being interviewed, like when the oldest brother got in his trouble, you know.
Yes.
It was obvious that she was not doing this for attention or for you know, clicks or anything like that.
Right.
It was painful, but it needed to be said and needed to be put out there. That's what I gathered from her, from the daughter watching it. And there were a lot of things that I, like I said earlier, I wasn't in the homeschool world, but I could kind of speak the language. Yeah. There were a lot of things that I thought, oh, I've seen that, or I've heard people talk about that. Especially like relationships and courtship and, you know, I think I was just too old to be, you know, caught up into that, or, you know, part of that. I was just old enough. And quick tangent here, like that book that Josh Harris wrote, that he is
Kiss Dating Goodbye,
since repudiated, and then even said he's not a Christian anymore. Like,
yeah.
that's pretty incredible, you know. That
it is.
So anyway, little tangent there.
I was forced to read that, by the way, as part of our homeschool curriculum. Go figure. But no, one other takeaway I just was reminded of. I don't remember who on Twitter said this, but they said, look, Bill Gothard perpetuated so much abuse. There were so many horrible things that happened. He's like, but the saddest thing to me, and I would agree with them, is what IBLP, the Institutes of Basic Life Principles, perpetuated was erasing people's humanity and their dignity, especially the children. All they wanted was compliant robots to say, yes, father, no, ma'am. They would hit their six-month-old, the blanket thing.
Yeah. Know? Oh, my gosh.
Hitting your kid who's not even old enough to understand what's going on, when they reach for a toy and they're on a blanket, it's a natural response and you're hitting them. Anyway, I think that's evil, right? I would argue that's satanic, to treat people with such a lack of dignity. And, you know, that stays with me. I think that there's a lot of reckoning that needs to happen in evangelicalism just from that one aspect.
Yeah, and Gothard was eventually dismissed, right? Because some abuse accusations that instead of defending him, the board said, nah, why don't you go away now? Which, you know, is very telling. So,
but yeah. He lives in LaGrange now. He still lives in LaGrange. He, as far as I know, he has never been arrested or convicted of anything.
I remember years ago my mom telling me that she was wondering why so many people listen to this guy who is not married and has no children, talking about being married and having children.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I would bring that up to my dad growing up. I'd be like, Dad, why does he have a marriage conference and he's never been married? Mm-hmm. And I think this came directly from Bill Gothard, because enough people probably asked him. And the answer is, well, neither was the Apostle Paul.
Oh my
it's
gosh.
Like, oh, okay. So he's putting him on the same level as a, you know, an anointed apostle. Huh. Okay.
All right. Yeah.
So cult.
Yeah. That was a difficult watch, but yeah, I think it's a necessary docu-series. And it was quite successful. I was looking up some of the data on it. Like, according to Variety magazine, it was the most watched docu-series over the first week in Amazon's history. And also more people subscribe to Amazon Prime in order to watch it. They must be able to track, like, okay, you signed up here, what's the first thing you watched?
Yeah.
So, but apparently that was the show that drew in more members to, to Amazon. So it's striking a chord for sure. Unless there's some people just watching it, you know, like who like to watch car wrecks and stuff. Maybe there's some of that, but
and there's probably some of that, some Schadenfreude.
Yeah, yeah. But man, in the people they interviewed, the Schadenfreude was not there. It was painful for them, you could tell, but at the same time, like I said before, they felt like it needed to be discussed. So yeah. So, hey, if people wanted to talk to you more about any of this, how can they get in touch with you? Or where are you on Twitter? Just your, like,
where am I?
Social media.
My Twitter handle?
Yeah, what's your Twitter handle?
I think I have 11 followers, but let me see.
All right.
At Ryan J.S. Lennon.
There you go.
So follow me, request me, because I think I went private or whatever.
Not a bad idea, yeah.
I don't think I'm on Instagram, but... yeah, follow me on Twitter or reach out to Chris and Chris will meet me.
That's right.
I'd love to talk more to anyone who is interested in talking about deconstruction or anything.
Because I think it's just going to get, I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
No.
And we didn't, there's an ex-evangelical movement too that we didn't even talk about, but there's a lot of common ground there as well. So I just think it's going to be, going to be here for a while.
But. Yeah, although back to one last thing, back to your point about, well, isn't that a healthy thing that all Christians should do is deconstruct from, you know, the reconstruct sense?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, what was the Protestant Reformation? But a gigantic example, right? Or you could even ask, what did the earliest Christians think that they were doing, but what we today would describe as deconstruction? They had more bits and pieces that they took from their tradition than I'm taking from evangelicalism, right? Pretty much all that, just so you know, the only thing that remains of what I took from evangelicalism is what is not unique to evangelicalism, i.e. the Nicene and Apostles' Creeds, right? We can agree on those things. I don't think it's an accident that the early church fathers and the early church creeds don't go beyond certain boundaries to say, here's how Christianity is defined. They realize how diverse, or they realized how diverse the Christian tradition is. And I think that's the way it should be.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned that, that's the point that my wife and I got to was, okay, if we can agree on these, like those two creeds in particular, then we're good. You know, we can discuss and debate other things, but if we share this together, then yeah, we're good to go.
Although some people still affirm that, and they still end up being QAnon conspiracy theorists, and that's something that I have a hard time wrapping my head around.
That's a good point. Yeah, way to shoot my point down, Ryan. Thanks.
I know.
So
I apologize. You can edit that out.
No. Well, hey, Ryan. Hey, it's great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Maybe check in later down the road and see if you're still a Christian or not.
Yeah.
Just kidding. No, thanks for being so open and so so vulnerable, man. This is hard stuff to talk about, I know, but I hope that the people that listen to this podcast can, you know, come away with some good stuff to chew on.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was great. Great discussion.